I'm in the southern Indian city of Chennai with Dr. V. Suresh, who is the All India General Secretary of the People's Union of Civil Liberties, which is India's leading civil rights and human rights organization. Dr. Suresh, we were talking earlier today about the issue of environmental activism and the pressures that are faced by environmental activists, by companies, because of companies' need for land or companies' need for resources. Can you tell us what the situation is like in India at present and what should be companies be doing?
The situation today is that companies are looking at resources in India as something that they can grab, loot and plunder. Though it's couched in very politically acceptable language of this is required for investments, development, etc. The tragedy is that most of the corporates don't realize that the type of technologies that they're bringing in and the type of factories that they're setting up are extremely degrading and destructive of environment. And what you may gain in the short run is going to affect them in the long run.
Can you give some examples? We were talking about health as one issue. So how would it have a human rights impact?
Human rights impact is of 2-3 levels, which can be directly talked about. For example, settling up massive number of thermal plants in water scarce areas.
Mm-hmm.
You see, or setting up chemical plants, polluting chemical plants in, river delta estuary areas, where presently there's a good amount of fresh water for their water needs, but not enough that will survive, 5 years or 8 years in the future. We are not talking of short time spans for industry. We are not talking of 30, 40 years, but we are not talking of 5 to 8 years. So there are 2-3 type of effects that it has. One, the air effluents affect air quality in the local area, thereby pushing up respiratory diseases. Water pollution causes a whole range of liver and other type of diseases, increasing health costs. This has a direct cascading effect on health of labor working in that area, both the direct labor and the indirect labor. This is not being factored into by the industry at all. The third aspect is also availability of fresh water, which affects health and also affects the industry's longevity in the long run. These costs are not factored in currently, and the type of environment impact assessment reports given by many companies, and I've been part of official committees in a number of these things, are fudged and faked for the short run to get their approvals.
Another worrisome thing I see is that the new land acquisition law actually says that social impact assessment may not be necessary, and the second one that the consent may not be necessary of the community. This would have long-term adverse consequences for companies because they would not have local acceptance, and that could lead to violence. Isn't that true?
Definitely. I mean, it's not just social acceptance. I mean, this the corporates are not really bothered about. But what the corporate should actually be bothered about are three things. One is that you're going to displace people and you're going to throw out people from their local areas, which has a direct cascading effect on education and thereby on availability of working class or workers in that area. It's already become an acute problem across India. We have the biggest number of young people in the world. In fact, we have a democratic advantage, which India is throwing out into the winds because corporates are not interested. In fact, the Skill Development Council is being chaired by one of the biggest persons of the software industry in India.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been talking to him, and he's been expressing deep care, deep concern about the fact that we have engineers who don't know engineering and doctors who don't know stethoscopes. This is one effect. The second effect is a large young population which is aging very fast because of environmental degradation. This in turn is going to have an effect on industries, which industries currently are not really looking for and they're not even bothered about, which is rather like the ostrich. You know, today I get, I'm not bothered about tomorrow, but it's going to catch up with industry in the rear end. And the third is on education. See, when you have populations which are displaced and constantly displaced, in the last 10 years, they've been displaced 3-4 times with the old laws, acquisition laws. Now, the protections in those old laws have been thrown to the
wind. Weakened, yes.
Not weakened, they've just been thrown to the wind.
Okay.
Okay, so now you're going to have a situation in which land is there for the asking, and the government has signaled very clearly that they are taking the sides of the corporates. The government, which should take a stand in terms of the rule of law, is now taking a stand in terms of rule of the corporates.
Right.
Not realizing the long-term harm that it is causing to the people. For the corporates, they are losing sight of the fact that a weakening of the democratic structures and the democratic processes are ultimately going to evolve a context in which the rule of law is going to be thrown to the winds and going to throw up social unrest. which in the long run is going to affect the industries.
But it seems to me that there's a reluctance, and this is my final question, that there's a reluctance on the part of the state to accept dissenting views. And the case in I have in mind is this activist from Greenpeace who was recently not allowed to travel to Britain to address a conference. And of course, she was able to then do so using Skype as a technological solution to the problem. But why this reluctance to listen to the other view?
See, this is the whole difficulty that we are facing now in India. As a human rights activist, I've been talking to some corporate heads also, saying that why do you look at anybody raising environmental concerns as adversaries? You see, so now there's a conjunction of the corrupt and the fast-changing in corporate industry with the state, with both of them identifying themselves as partners in the looting that's going on there. And therefore, not willing to listen to the issues put forward by the environment movement, giving its own respect. I mean, they may disagree with it at the end, but can they look at it in terms of what its impact is going to be and see if there is any validity even in 10% of the charges taken up, which is exactly what happened to the Greenpeace campaigner. In fact, PUCL came out with a strong statement saying that that the Prime Minister, who is now wanting global capital and is keen to use global social media and has actually used global social media
very successfully
in Washington, in Australia, wherever he has gone, is not wanting to have global free communication.
Right.
They only want communication of one type, not of general type.
Right.
You see, and this is the tragedy and the paradox that India is going through. So this Greenpeace campaigner, Priya Pillai, we argued, was only doing her constitutional duty, a fundamental duty as put in the Indian constitution, of raising scientific temper in the country and acting to protect environment, especially water and natural resources.
Right.
This is part of India's constitution. So this is as an aspect of free flow of information, where diverse information is allowed to flow, so people can make up their own.
Absolutely.
Now, what has happened is that across the country, people are ordinary people who would never have given a second thought to the Mahan coal field and not read it in the papers, are now saying, why did the government go to this extreme of stopping a 30-year-old lady from going to Britain to talk about? Which means there is some validity in what she has said.
Right.
And therefore, see, there is also a suspicion, a lurking suspicion in most people, especially the older ones who are not seeking jobs immediately, saying that the corporates are actually crooks. Now, this lurking suspicion is strengthened by people, by the actions of the government, which is ironic, but that's a paradox of the times we are living in.
And India continues to remain a very interesting and exciting place as a result.
Yes, yes. I mean, it is exciting as a third party from outside.
Yes.
But talking to
it's
you
not
as
at
a
all
human
pleasant
rights,
to those who have to
it's
live
not
through,
pleasant
yeah.
and not pleasant when you are
absolutely
at the receiving end of it.
Yeah.
Because the space for dissent, the space for alternative thought, the space for contradictory opinions, or the possibility of being contrarian, is not just shrinking. It has now become so hazardous that if you are contrarian, you risk not just violation of your personal liberty, but life itself.
We wish you all the very best and bon courage, as the French would say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.